This week's episode of the SGGQA podcast is brought to you by Frame It. You've just shot a great piece of video, but now you need to frame it. Phones are crazy powerful options for video editing, but a lot of our editing apps still try to work like desktop video software. Frame It gives you streamlined tools to do more advanced edits, but with controls that are a better fit for your phone screen. Use the actions you're already familiar with, like pinch to zoom and rotate, just like you're editing a photo, but with video. Pan, zoom, rotate, and crop as easily as scanning your photo gallery. Time your pans and movements to music. Punch in for dramatic effect. Flip through a transition or fix a video for the right orientation. Load up a video and Frame It will record your edits and moves in real time. Trim out parts of a clip you don't need, and the app renders out all of your edits as a finished clip. Fast, easy, powerful. Frame It is free and available now on Google Play. Your video's not really done until you frame it. For more info on Frame It and tutorials on how to get the best edits out of your phone camera, head on over to frameitapp.com. Once again, frameitapp.com. I want to thank Frame It for supporting the SGGQA podcast. And now, let's get on with the show. And we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Kind of forgot to click my mic on there at the end of the sponsor roll, but we're rolling now. Now it's all good. And I'm already seeing a phenomenal crew here in this live chat. Aditya, Heike, Renesh, Gadget Guy, Access One, Lanny82 saying hello, Charlie Spirit Song, Chatty Boy, who am I missing? I'm missing some folks, Gabaletta, and Access One TV subscribing on the Twitch, another tier one sub, and I thank you very much for supporting production on this stream. Thank you for joining me. We're going a little early this week. If you're catching the live stream, this is 8 a.m. On the West Coast on L.A. time because Apple was so inconsiderate. It really hurts my feelings that they would plan their worldwide developer conference keynote to start right in the middle. Right smack dab in the middle of my normal podcast schedule. It's like they didn't even ask. It's like they didn't even think to like see if it would be disruptive. It just benefits Apple. So Tech Dave, Tech Dave, welp, I'm damn. Everyone saying hey, good morning here. We've got a bit of tech to get through. I do want to lead this into sort of like a WWDC pre-show. So instead of doing my normal sort of tech and politics first block and then second block gadget block, this week we're going to play around, do something a little different where I'm going to try and mix up some of the news stories. And then the second half of the podcast is going to be all Apple. There's some Apple news. Some of the things that we might expect from WWDC, and then some of the tech and politics of Apple, like some of the recent disclosures from the Apple versus Epic lawsuit, which are kind of surprising. You know, we kind of take certain things about Apple for granted. We listen to their marketing, and then the reality turns out to be very, very different than the image that Apple likes to put out there. But no, I'm really looking forward to WWDC this year. Just same thing with Google I.O. There's so many conversations that are happening right now about how we use our gadgets and what our expectations should be. And I feel like the developer conferences increasingly are opportunities to talk more about the use rather than just what's the new hardware that's coming out. Because I think a lot of us, especially if you're in the chat on a stream like mine, you know, it's becoming a little less critical that we always have the up-to-the-minute latest and greatest, most powerfulest chipset in a phone and, you know, the premium tier, and is it a mid-ranger or a budget mid-ranger or a premium mid-ranger, or is it a luxury feature phone with gimmicks? Like, that's becoming less critical. What we really want to talk about is what can you do with it? And it's at a developer conference where I think we get some really clear insight on the direction that these companies are going. DTNL, some Apple speculations guy. Okay, so I'm going to be cribbing off of Tech Radar for my list, for what to expect from WWDC. And it's a pretty straightforward list, because I'm sure we're going to be seeing, you know, operating system updates. But my main prediction is going to be for iPad. So just to tease the second half of this show, my main specific prediction is going to be for how iPad is handled. So I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. Just for the Casa de Bagnell, I tried to say that as painfully Peggy Hill as I could just there. We had a really lovely weekend. This is like our first almost sort of settled in weekend. We still have so many boxes to unpack. But I spent a little time just cleaning up a bit more in the gadget lab. That was one of the teases that I put out on the Patreon. I'm going to try and do a few more little, like, you know, pre-tour. I feel like by the end of this week, I can maybe do a live stream where I just walk everyone around Gadget Lab 4 and kind of the expectations that I have for how I'm going to shoot in this new office. This office is a little smaller. But I did have to tease just a little. Oh, come, Firefox. I've got to close my Twitch chat. And now OBS always pulls the wrong window, and I forgot to double check. This stream is going great, by the way, if you hadn't noticed. So I teased just a little on Patreon. This is one of the first little shots of Gadget Lab 4, kind of moving a tiny student IKEA desk just under this window. So I've got, you know, sort of a sunset scene behind some tech, keeping this nice and simple. At the same time, I'm also looking at ways that I can really maximize my storage, because I have way less storage space. And the bookshelves behind me are going to keep filling up. It used to be I would just take the bottom row of this bookshelf and just pack it to the gills with phone boxes and like packing material, shipping material, all of like the inserts, the enormous amount of chargers that I tend to accrue. So that's gonna go through the whole bookshelf now. Like I have a tiny little closet, and we don't have like hallway closets that I can absorb. So you know, my backdrop is gonna be less defocused sparkly lights and more all kinds of stuff, tons of stuff. But then also that should kind of help too, because I have issues with like quick setups, you know, like I want to set up a camera and I got to get this light and I want to use this mic. And if I've got a shelf that's right behind me where I can keep all my camera gear, that should maximize some of the time that I spend in this office. So there's a lot of philosophy going on. I had to show off just a bit, you know, where we're at right now, because I'm really happy with this little desk layout. And is the place that I'm going to start staging some B-roll. I'm just so happy to have a window I can look out. Gadget Lab 3 had this window that sort of looked out over an ugly condo parking lot, and in the morning would just get direct hard light, like right in my face. So I couldn't even keep it up, keep my windows open while shooting. Here I've got a lot more flexibility. I can black out curtain. I can control the lighting. I can open everything up and just get natural light. It's smaller, but it's already proving to be a better layout and more flexible. It's more more functional. So give me one second. I want to get my chat pop out so I can make sure I'm keeping up with Twitch specifically. There we go. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. All right. So the weekend. Yeah, we hiked around the neighborhood. We found a Baskin Robbins. Lex was really excited about ice cream. We got to schedule some play dates so that Lex could see some of her friends. We're wrapping up school. It's a lot of life transitions. You know, all of this is proving to be good stuff, but when you've got a lot of things going on, you know, those emotions, they run pretty high. And it's been encouraging. Like Lex is taking to the new place. She's not like freaking out, like no nightmares in the middle of the night or anything like that, knock on wood. But yeah, so I hope everyone else out there, whether or not you're going through big life changes yourselves, as we all start trying to figure out what the new normal is, I hope you had a lovely weekend too. So my tech review is having some breakfast to start the day. So and Fat Produce. So Andrew gave me a little video call tour of his new place that they're going to hopefully be moving into soon. And some very impressive Amish construction. And I, you know, I was definitely jealous of how much house he could buy compared to the amount of money we spent on this condo. And Andrew saying it's crazy how sometimes it feels like everyone is having life changes these days. I definitely feel this is kind of speaking to what the last year was like. Not to diminish anyone who's just still hunkering down, or maybe in your region, you know, progress isn't being made as quickly, but just little glimmers of what new life should look like. And I feel a lot of people are kind of reacting to that, even if it's just sort of unconscious or subconscious or just emotional. You know, part of our move was also kind of motivated by, we didn't want to spend more time in the place that we had done a year under quarantine. You know, you just kind of itching to change your surroundings, your location, your stimulus that's kind of hitting you. I think a lot of people are kind of reacting to those feels. It's time to reconsider your work-life balance. It's time to reinvest in your relationships and your friendships and your family. It's time to get outside or find better opportunities when you're holed up and staying inside. It's funny. The place that we were leasing, where Gadget Lab 3 was, we officially turned in our keys Memorial Day. Yeah, there we go. We officially turned in our keys Memorial Day. It's already been snatched up. Someone else is already renting it. So the turnaround, people are kind of thirsty for something different. Arthur Lee, my big life change is that I got hired at another tech publication and I should be able to quit my fast food job in a few months. Nice. Arthur Lee. I mean, I don't know if you can talk about it publicly or if you don't want to say it, that's totally fine, but hit me up. Drop me a line. Let me know where you end up so that I can start pimping your articles more on Glowing Rectangles. But seriously, congratulations. That's fantastic. Gabaletta, last year, the place we had moved, we spent the whole year inside because of the pandemic. We just recently moved to a new place. It feels nice to get out a bit more. Now, that is exactly what happened to us. We were weeks into our place before where Gadget Lab 3 was. We were weeks into that when everything went into lockdown. And that's why we've been so sensitive to Lex is... she had a major life change. The world shut down. And now she's got another major life change. So that's whiplash, man. That's tough. Gabaletta, I totally commiserate with that kind of a schedule. It feels necessary, but at the same time, it's kind of extreme. I don't know that I've ever lived in one place shorter, except for the tiny efficiency that Marie and I stayed in for a couple months when we first moved out to LA. Moving is brutal. So, I definitely share those feels. Why don't we knock out a little housekeeping and, we can get into our first non-Apple block, the first half of this podcast. Housekeeping is going to be pretty lean. Obviously TK and I are back into streaming. We've gotten the last 2 weeks out for Best of Our Week. So you can catch that on the YouTubes. I'll have a link, all of our links, everything I talk about for housekeeping, for all of the news stories, everything you're going to find on this week's show notes on somegadgetguide.com. Let me get this out of the way here. And you'll have to pardon, my throat is super raw. I tried to shoot ahead for this week and I did a lot of talking over the weekend. So, clicking into screen share, I was really happy to finally get this video out. My little project of 2020 hearing, I was not able to keep up with my hearing health and audio quality series of videos over the course of 2020. The year that we had last year just was not conducive to this as a side project. But I'm going to stick with 2020 hearing. I just feel like it's too good of a pun, even though now we're currently in the year 2021. But I was really happy to finally get this video out. It was sort of inspired by some conversations that I've had with other tech YouTubers of the female persuasion. And a part of this was also previewed on Best of Our Week, where we were getting some comments back and forth about people having issues with earbuds. And then it kind of spurred a discussion where I don't feel like a lot of male tech enthusiasts always fully understand just some of the challenges that people with more petite frames, including more petite ear canals, can't share some of these experiences. You just take it for granted. Like, if, especially if you're a dude my size, like I am almost peak of the bell curve, boring average. I'm like near the peak of average height. I'm near the peak of average overweight in the United States. I need to lose some weight. But everything is perfectly designed for me. Top shelf of a cabinet in a kitchen, perfectly designed for me. Being able to comfortably sit in the back seat of a hatchback, still perfectly designed for me. I am like right on top of that bell curve. So earbuds, no big thing. I mean, nearly everything can fit or be adjusted. And then I look at my wife and almost nothing can work for her. And I really want those of us who enjoy the privilege of products being designed for us to put ourselves into someone else's shoes. What would it be like if you literally could not fit earbuds in your ears? And the advice that we give is horrifically unhelpful. You know, like, well, did you try using smaller ear tips? As if, like, she's functionally incapable of looking at bag of ear tips to, like, pick out the smaller ones and try those. So I put together this video. Again, the 2020 hearing videos are sort of my passion projects, and hopefully getting back to doing a few more of those. I really need to finish up. I started the script. I started shooting it in Gadget Lab 3. I'm going to scrap what I shot because I feel like I can tackle this better now. Is a what to do when your phone has no headphone jack, you know, audiophile kind of conversation. Like, what types of solutions are out there? So there will definitely be some follow-ups and some continued 2020 hearing videos coming out. The other major video I got out, this was just sort of a test to see if I could shoot it. I really didn't know if I was going to be able to pull off a phone review yet. I've got the Mi 11i, right? So we talked about this on Best of Our Week. I'm very impressed with this phone. I want to do a good job of telling the story of how I use this phone. So I didn't want to just kick off with Mi 11i in case I couldn't finish it. But at the same time, I've also been spending some QT with the Infinix Note 10 Pro. And I hate to say it this way, like, as far as a mission critical video for me, I kind of used the Infinix as like the test. Was this really going to work? Was I really going to be able to pull this off? And I think it came out really well. It's a good first look at what new reviews are going to look like on my channel. Being able to set up a camera, I'm so happy to be able to like stand up in my office and like move around. And it just happened to go hand in hand with a phone that's kind of fun to talk about. When we start getting into that lower budget, I've already gotten some like hate comments like, oh, what a shill. This is just a paid ad for the Infinix. Like, I don't know what you want out of a video. Like, if you really judge this phone on what it's trying to deliver, I think it absolutely achieves what it's trying to do, what it's setting out to do. And as long as you're fair with some of the pros and cons, like, this is a phone that sells for under 250 euro, full MSRP, which means, you know, 6 euro and a half a ham sandwich in most cell phone shops. You could probably walk out the door with this phone. And when you really kind of grade it on the reality of what it's like to shop at that tier, I feel like this is eminently successful. Kind of same thing. Like, I gave the Stylo 6 a good review, right? No surprise, it's an LG. But I didn't give it a good review at MSRP. I gave it a good review on the sale price I got, where it was less than half of MSRP. I kind of feel the same way. You know, it's really easy to pack a bunch of hardware into an inexpensive phone Just that little bit of polish, some consideration for the build. The hardware is on point, you know, 90 hertz refresh rate, a G95 MediaTek processor, goodly amount of RAM and storage, dual SIM and micro SD. If you're that person who really is shopping at the tier, like maybe you just can't afford, you can't step up, you can't do some kind of payment program, or you just want to save some cash, I feel like this is terrifically successful. And it kind of plays into that tier of phones that I'm really excited by. Nords, some of the lower cost Motos, TCLs. And then that kind of leads us into the slightly nicer version of this idea on Pixels and iPhone SEs. You know, this is good territory, and it's exciting to see how much tech has trickled down. All right. Awesome Possum. Hype. Love my Monday mornings because of the Some Gadget Show and chat crew. True story. I think we're going to have some fun conversations this week. One hell of a boy. Sorry. I was like, one hello, fa boy. Sorry. Speaking of 2020 hearing, everything I play on YouTube Music feels like it's slightly louder than on YouTube app or Spotify. Does anyone else out there feel the same? Considering that they are probably pulling audio from different, slightly different sources, it might be gained differently, but that also might just be a component of how your phone is kind of balancing all that stuff out. I haven't noticed any specific playback differences on YouTube Music, but then again, I'm comparing against things like YouTube Music, against Spotify, against Tidal, and then also against my own private collection, where I'll play most everything over USB Audio Player Pro. And Squishy Man 2007, super true. Budget phones getting good is really exciting. Not only just really exciting, but like under 250 euro, this is a way more feature complete device than a lot of our premium tier phones. So if you genuinely don't need the compute power of an 888, you get multiple cameras of varying quality. The ultra wide is kind of garbage. Headphone jack, micro SD card expansion. Oh no, I don't get wireless charging. You got 33 watt cabled fast charging in an under 250 euro phone with a 90 hertz display. I mean, it's like out of the box. Oh, and it comes with a case and a screen protector. I mean, just like that is a complete consumer experience. You don't have to like, you don't have to feel like you're getting gouged. Oh, you can afford a $1,000 phone? That means you can also afford really expensive cases and supplying your own screen protectors and buying some other niceties like Bluetooth headphones. Like, it's just, it's getting tight. It's getting real tight out there. I mean, again, I totally appreciate why the consumer experience at $1,000 is starting to feel less fulfilling, because it's not about the phone. It's that you spent $1,000 and it's incomplete, and you need to spend more to fill in all the little gaps of what's been cut out. All right, let me, I'm also streaming early, so I'm also kind of catching up on my normal coffee consumption. So, and the last bit of housekeeping, I already kind of showed this off. I teased just the little desk setup that I'm going to be using in Gadget Lab 4. I'm really excited. You know, a little $50 IKEA desk just totally, it sort of like changed up my vibe. I have a window. Guys, for the last year, I've been in a blacked out office that I couldn't use I can use this window. Oh, I'm just so excited. here's the question that I want to put out there. And please hit me up in the chat. I trust you all more than if I did, like, you know what? I still might do a poll on YouTube, on the YouTube community, but I'd like to know here. I want to put some little decoration. Let me pull this back up from the Patreon photo. Stark, clean, simple white desk, right? Obviously, my little laptop isn't going to live there, because I honestly don't use that laptop much. And I use my desktop, my lap docks more than I really use my laptop. But super simple, right? So I want to keep this clean, but I want some little accent or some little decoration that I can put on that desk. Do I go with some kind of silly, ridiculous greenery, like a succulent, do I join that club of YouTube tech reviewers where I've got, like, a little plant? And I'm not going to go plastic. If I go succulent, I'm doing a real live plant. In fact, what I'm considering, if I go that route, is maybe be like a little cactus. Cute, adorable, little fluffy, hurt my fingers cactus. Or is there some other type of accent or decoration that I could put, like, on the corner of this desk just for some type of visual reference? As I'm, like, looking top down on the phone, I want an all white surface. As I shoot it at an angle, I'm going to have the background being a window. I can move the desk around if I want the background to be the bookshelf. What should I put there? If it's a plant, I'm probably going to go succulent or cactus. But is there something else that I might be missing? Sal Botnick is saying a bonsai. I cannot take care of a bonsai. I will kill a bonsai. Awesome Possum is saying, let's make a bobblehead. Oh, that could be fun. The bonsai makes you look cultivated and you can cut it in a special way. No, I am telling you, I will kill that bonsai. I can maybe pull off a cactus. I don't think I can pull off anything that's like a small tree in nice, like, you know, pottery. You know, like, what was it? I killed off my last succulent just because I tried to keep it in the office and I couldn't keep it getting good light. Oh, Squishy Man is saying, the geek in me says a Transformer or a small Starship Enterprise. So I gotta put her on blast. My wife came in here this morning and she was like, oh yeah, and you need to get some more decorations. Maybe we can frame some of your photography. We can put it up on the wall. And then, you know, I saw you had on the door that you put up that thing that Andrew sent you. Fat Produce was kind enough to send me a blueprint. It's the actual patent office of the toy of my all-time favorite Starfleet starship from Star Trek. I said star way too many times in that last sentence. But she comes in and she's like, yeah, I know you put up that poster. I go, what is that poster again? Was it like the Millennium Falcon? And we had to school Marie on starship design and different science fiction properties. It was not my best moment. But she needed to know. I don't know if I would go Enterprise. I'd probably go Excelsior. I have a little Excelsior. Is it? Yeah, you can kind of see it right there by my Xenomorph. There's my Excelsior right there. I'd maybe do that one. Put a pickle fresh out of its jar. That would definitely be on brand. Because, you know, when it's this much of a white desk, you know, I can do one little corner accent and then I can prop the phone up. I mean, I'm using an IKEA wood block stand there, but then I could also throw a coffee mug, like one of my merch mugs. I could do a couple different things just to again, kind of break up a little of the visual there, but keep it simple. And we can keep my B-roll looking really clean. I'm excited. Again, it's just I'm buzzing with new potential and new opportunities. Charlie Spirit Song, if you ever put a cactus, somebody will definitely demand you to put an option to prick yourself. The funny thing is like, they won't need to, like, I'll do it on my own. I'm not that graceful. ER1980. That's a good one. How about a Lego project? I have, there's my plastic bag full of Hulkbusters. So that could definitely work too. You know, and that's the other thing also is I'll have the ability to kind of swap things out. So that could be fun. Oh, Heike, what about a Venus flytrap? And every time some reviewer says something bad about LG or Sony, Juan feeds a fly to the flytrap. We were at one of the grocery stores. Was it Ralph's or was it Vaughn's? Anyway, we're walking through and my daughter flipped out because they're little, like, I don't even know. It's like their florist aisle. It's, you know, it's kind of tacky. It's a supermarket and you go there and you can get, like, you know, a bouquet of flowers. On the display, they had racks of Venus flytraps. So it's like that one we could actually maybe pull off. I don't know if we have enough insect wildlife in our home to keep a Venus flytrap fed. And if we put it outside, it would die super fast. It's way too hot and way too dry. But I always wanted to get another pitcher plant. You want me to nerd out? Okay. I had a Sarracenia leucophyllae. It was this beautiful, like, green and purple pitcher plant. So these big tubes and stalks and like these big flaps and flies would fly down into them. I loved that thing, but again, it way too hot, way too dry in Southern California, so we couldn't keep it fed, and then it kind of got all brown and brittle. And like, ah, this is such a cool plant. Ugh, I'm so bad at keeping plants alive. It's awful. So, yeah. All right, moving right along. Oh, we do. We got some. Let me see what we can do here. Sorry, we've got some fun people in our chat. I'm getting red alert, red alert. Hold on 1 second. Switch to. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. So, why don't we jump into some news? Yeah, housekeeping. We're already a half an hour into the show, and I have to see. This is so frustrating because the different settings on Twitch make it very difficult to kind of monitor and manage this stuff while you're in the middle of a stream. So, we'll let it slide. We'll see if we can stay on topic, stay on chat. So we've got some news here, and I want to kick on. For the first half of this, again, it's kind of a mix between, you know, our normal gadgety news and some of our tech and politics. Hey, Matt Tyler also subbed at tier one. Charlie Spirit Song, we forgot to bet on the housekeeping timer. And Fat Produce, gifting a tier one, two sub to Some Gadget Guys community, gifting a tier two sub to Arthur Lee. 525, what is up? Oh, and I just got a little banner. You got a limited time to earn exclusive emotes. We've got a hype train coming in. So thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate the support. Let me get this out of the way here. Tech and politics, the intersection of our political entities and our technology companies. We've been keeping an eye on this story for a while now. For me, it's been kind of curious to watch since the Mate 10 days, but the Biden administration seems to be continuing with the current conversation surrounding Huawei. This story is coming from interestingengineering.com. And I think their take on it's pretty funny. Like, ooh, the tech wars have just begun. Like, no, this is something that's been going around for a while now. But this is president just banned all U.S. investment in Huawei. The aim is to limit tech connected to China's military-industrial complex. In the wake of former executive orders from Trump that banned a handful of companies in China from buying U.S. technology, current President Biden has issued a new executive order that bans U.S. investments in 59 different defense and tech firms in China, according to a press release on the White House's official website. This is funny. In other words, the tech wars have officially begun. I kind of feel that as we've been hammering Huawei with these kinds of market correction and defense and security initiatives, I feel like this has been ongoing. I feel like this has already been a part of the conversation. The Biden administration said the new executive order was created to address quote, let me get there. To address a continuing, quote, threat posed by the military-industrial complex of the People's Republic of China. The White House further claimed the ongoing development of Chinese technology, including surveillance tech, in addition to expanded deployment of this tech in countries beyond China's borders, represents a risk to national security. The new order is also in response to the abuse of human rights of people in China. It's very likely. Oh, where is it? I can't find it in this article, but it's very likely that this too will be challenged. The constitutionality, the legality of this executive order. We're going to be seeing another round of court cases going up from Huawei, but I'm still curious to see if this does make any kind of round of disclosure. When this stuff hits a court, we should see some accounting or some auditing of why these moves have been made on Huawei's as an action against Huawei. It's still been the troubling aspect of this is a company that has invested in telecommunications infrastructure, and that maybe makes them a concern, but what evidence do we have to support this initiative beyond just, well, we're pretty sure they sold some stuff to Iran, and if they manage the networking equipment, then they can probably tap in a back door and send all your data to China. It's the separation of consumer technologies, infrastructure technologies, and I'd still like to see that evidence. I'd still like to see what exactly is the threat, what is the risk here. You know, DJI was placed on a similar entities list because they sell drones and camera equipment, and some of that is likely being purchased by the Chinese military. At what point do we draw a line to say a company that sells products and those products are bought by a military is supporting that company's military? And it sets up a standard that I feel some American companies likely wouldn't be able to live up to. So there are concerns, you know. Again, if we're making this a more of a consumer play, like we're really going after Huawei because we want Qualcomm technology to be leading the 5G rollout, that's going to be difficult to defend in a court of law once disclosures happen and once we see what this evidence looks like. But again, a lot of this will probably be redacted and not shared with the public. It's just so strange to see like yet another, you know, Huawei's ability to impact consumer markets has already been hammered to a significant degree. We could have added that to the list too. Huawei had a bunch of announcements out, and while we didn't get the P50, you know, they're looking at a new tablet. We're looking at monitors. They're going to be coming out with new like professional monitors that are supposed to be really nice. It's a funny state. We'll also have to see, because I feel like what we might have gotten with the P50, which is sort of struggling to get all the components in place and all of the shipping and orders processed, and Harmony OS has been getting panned by the tech reviewers out there. You know, you've got the Honor 50, which looks very similar, which might be able to make a bigger play for any kind of Asian market sales right now. From Zalbotnik, this is so weird. Several media did Wireshark tests with Huawei equipment and found nothing. I do understand the strategic problems in terms of telecom infrastructure, but then just don't buy it and go for Ericsson. And Gabaletta saying, I feel like Huawei was the scapegoat the U.S. government needed to rip the cord from China. So there were... Again, I'm not trying to just, you know, this is completely one-sided. It's totally unfair against Huawei. I feel there were some punitive actions that Huawei probably needed as market corrections. Same thing that happened with ZTE, where they were sort of selling technologies to countries on entities lists that the international community had said, we're not going to do that. And then ZTE kind of doubled down on it, where their executives didn't really face the consequences of those actions. So we shut down ZTE. ZTE then backpedaled, they corrected for it. Some executives, I think, even served jail time, and then kind of opened those doors back up. But there was an accounting for that. There was like a public accounting for why is it that we're taking this action against ZTE. And again, ZTE and Huawei facing this level of scrutiny because it's not just phones and consumer gadgets. Excuse me. It's also telecommunications equipment. We haven't had the same kind of accounting on Huawei. Why is this action taking place? What is the evidence that they need to be hit this hard? Why can't they ever recover? You know, at what point can we say, like, here is the criteria or here is the threshold that would allow Huawei to open their doors again to international and United States businesses? And there doesn't seem to be one. We know that they have engaged in some interesting practices with other companies' intellectual property. A while back, we talked about it. We had an episode where I talked about that story of a company coming up with a new type of diamond glass, diamond crystal glass, and how Huawei individuals like got a sample of it and broke it. And a shard of it was missing, and it wasn't supposed to leave the continental United States because there are, you know, sort of military uses and security concerns over it. We know Huawei has played fast and loose with other companies' IP. That deserves a market correction of some kind and some kind of punitive action. But like ZTE, I wonder, what is the threshold of corrective action that would allow Huawei to do business again? And if we don't know what those goalposts are, then it does feel lopsided. It feels like an overcorrection to tag Huawei this hard. And Fat Produce, I'm just confused how other Chinese OEMs aren't under the same level of scrutiny, aside from the fact that Huawei has network infrastructure technology that I understand. That to me becomes the linchpin. It's not, oh no, you bought a Huawei phone and it's going to spy on you. It's Huawei's infrastructure, but you tackle the whole company. You can't make it. Again, this is why I want to see some evidence. This is why I want to see some discussion, because it's not just, you know, Huawei bad. You know, it, like, there are different divisions. Like, there's no reason why we couldn't sell Bluetooth Broadcom chipsets to Huawei if the main issue with Huawei was telecommunications infrastructure. Like, their consumer business shouldn't be getting hammered like this. It does seem to be kind of an all or nothing, shut it down. But why? So again, it's odd. And we've changed presidential administrations, but we also seem to be kind of following lockstep with the same security and defense conversations from before. So at some point, I feel like we should get better data as consumers. In 20 miles, if you're going to take down a major Chinese company, Huawei would be a serious target. I know it pissed off Beijing something fierce. And Gabaletta, I'm just surprised OnePlus didn't face the same scrutiny as Huawei or Xiaomi did. Xiaomi was recently cleared. They sued against the order considering them sort of a Chinese military collaborator. And so they're back. I feel like this is one of the reasons why Xiaomi has been working so hard to cede devices to reviewers like me. Me 11i. But in markets where they're traditionally not sold directly, because I feel like Xiaomi now has the potential to create some inroads, like maybe bring the Redmi brand to low-cost carriers here in the United States. And now that they've won this action against the federal government's entities list, that there's better potential there. You know, you walk into a Boost Mobile and you see some of the Redmis or even like a Mi 11 Lite. That'd be a really sweet phone to include in a low-cost carrier. You build up from there, and then eventually you might see like a Mi 12 Ultra in an AT&T store. You know, like that was always the hope, was what we would get the Mate series in a T-Mobile or in a Verizon. Would have been really cool. My Mate 10 over there is this weird example of what almost came to AT&T. So, you know, you can look at like the whole BBK series of brands. You can look at all of the Xiaomi sub brands. Xiaomi, BBK, they don't work telecommunications infrastructure as hard. They're more consumer facing and lifestyle products. Like, they're not going to be so mad if you can't get a Xiaomi laptop to go with your Xiaomi scooter and your Xiaomi car with your Xiaomi blender. You know, like That doesn't seem to bother our federal government as much. And Squishy Man, exactly. As a Canadian, it's interesting to see how the U.S. government handles Huawei and their products, as I can buy a Huawei phone at a Canadian phone carrier. Yeah, kind of. I feel it's worth a bit more disclosure. I would like to see some evidence. So, moving right along, I have been digging the heck out of my TicWatch. So this is the TicWatch Pro 3. This is just the Wi-Fi version. I don't have the LTE version. But this has been a wonderful update for Wear OS. And it kills me that, you know, the conversation around Wear OS is still kind of a shrug and an eye roll, because what Mobvoi has done with the software, with their updates, it's now not only on MR2, but it also got a polish update for Mobvoi's sort of custom software. That performance has been fantastic. It's one of the most fluid watches you can use. Battery life is still easily 2.5 to 3 days. It's excellent. It really is a very good example of a smartwatch that kind of lands in a comfortable pricing territory under a top-of-the-line Apple Watch. You don't get EKG, but you get blood ox, you get fitness tracking, you get automatic workout modes, you get, you know, a variety of workouts that you can tag, and then you get all of the applets and smart features too. This is what Wear OS should always have felt like, but we never had the hardware to back it up. And on a watch that you don't need to charge every day. You know, like my Apple Watch is a charge at dinner time kind of watch if I really use it. It's a great watch. It is really like the best compute platform, but man, that thing's thirsty. I can't really fathom using an Apple Watch for like daily life stuff and fitness tracking. I'd be charging it twice a day, every day. Which I'm sure that little battery, Apple's always known for their great batteries, right? So we've gotten some recent news. Samsung and Google are going to be sort of joining forces, merging what Samsung has learned by putting out Galaxy watches with Tizen, with a refresh for Wear OS, more material design coming to the UI. I feel like this is a good strategic partnership. Instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and let Apple keep, you know, sort of extending their lead, join forces, collaborate, and produce better products. I'm on board. So it was a little disconcerting where one of the most visible manufacturers of Wear OS, like that's not a high bar. I'm really trying not to be snarky here, but for as much as I love my TicWatch, I feel like Fossil has gotten way more coverage. Because they're like this international watch brand. They make nicer looking watches. I really do, especially like Skagen. I love Skagen design. But this came out of CNET, written up by Scott Stein. Fossil is planning a premium Google Wear OS watch for fall. So they have an interview here with an executive where they're talking about like, hey, we're really going to get into LTE and advanced fitness tracking. We're going to focus on hardware to really speed up the experience, make everything nicer. And along the way, in this conversation, they kind of let slip that their current watches, they're not going to be supporting this upcoming collaboration between Google and Samsung for the next generation of Wear OS. So if you're currently on a Fossil watch, you're pretty much done for software support. So a part of this, I have to believe this speaks to the next phase of Wear OS software needing a certain tier of hardware. You probably don't want to be running this next level of software and all of the little applets and the greater compute demands on a Snapdragon 2100, or the 3100 is kind of exactly the same for compute power. So 2100 to 3100 was sort of a dumb, not really an upgrade in terms of performance. And a lot of those watches also lacking RAM. You know, Wear OS woke up with a gig of RAM, and then it got real good when you jumped to the 4100 that's out now on the TicWatch. So this is sort of the frustration that we've had with numerous consumer products in the past. when developers kind of get the rug pulled out from under them. Recently, we saw those changes to Wear OS where older applets and card-based interfaces and updates just couldn't migrate to older watches. That really changed up, like, you have an app on your phone and that can have a kind of a competing, not a competing, a companion app on your watch, and that got severed. So that old developer relationship got severed. That means developers would have to put more effort into supporting a smartwatch platform that not a lot of people are using. Now it's looking like whatever comes out of the Samsung Google partnership is just going to need more horsepower. So if you were, you're like, hey, I got this great deal on like a, on like a Misfit or on a Fossil or on a Scoggin, man, this is super cool. But now you're just sort of out in the cold. And they're talking about like, well, we've got this sort of inventory on older watches and maybe we can use those as budget options, just like Apple has done with the Apple Watch. You get an Apple Watch SE. It's basically an Apple Watch Series 3. When your platform is that divided, though, you're sort of selling a dead end, and you're currently selling a dead end. I feel like you're just going to frustrate consumers more in the long term. You're not really going to be bringing more people to the fold with these low cost options. They're going to pick this up and go like, hey, my watch doesn't do anything new. Doesn't do any of this cool stuff that the Samsung just did. Your new watch is doing all of this cool premium tech stuff, but I'm sort of left out in the cold. And instead, I kind of wish like we could just properly divert, you know, just move on. It's fine. And what I've seen so far, the evidence I've seen so far from this Tick watch is whatever comes up next is probably going to be good. I mean, this is really good. I you know, the ability to click in and fire up some pretty decent little applets. Like I use the hearing, they use the little mics on the watch to like grade the sound pressure level around you. Like stuff like that is great. And it's now working smooth enough that I will do that from the watch instead of pulling out my phone. So it does abbreviate the interaction. It's really sweet. From Q3 Becker, I'm really hoping the Tick Watch 3 Pro is going to be updated. Someone poked Mobvoi about it on Twitter and they simply responded, stay tuned. Again, we don't have any confirmation. I haven't been given any word from Mobvoi PR that's any better than that tweet that you referenced there that you mentioned. But I would imagine we have the potential. Again, it seems to me like you need more storage, you need more RAM, and you need a faster processor. So all the guts of the Tick Watch 3 Pro are on point. Smartwatch updates in Wear OS land have been painfully slow, so I would not expect a fast turnaround, but I'm hoping that all of those parts are in place. That moving forward, if you're on Tick Watch 3 and newer, moving forward, we're already ahead of the curve on hardware. So we should be able to keep up with the next generation of software, even if we don't, you know, get anything after that for support. Gary the Fireman gifting a tier one sub to Goran Petrovic and one hell of a boy. Gary, thanks so much, man. I always appreciate it. And that's really cool to kind of spread the love out that way. Again, it helps keep this stuff rolling. I'm really happy about that. Vazicose, I personally want more e-ink options in smartwatches. It's the displays. It's the screen. It really is. You know, I was saying my Apple Watch, like if I just use it as the watch and with a little fitness tracking and step counting, like I still got to charge it before bed. You know, like I've got to charge it during the day. I get like an 18-hour use window. My Tick Watch, I can hypermile it out to over 3 days. It was off the charger yesterday morning at around 7 a.m. and I'm at 80%. Yesterday was a light day. You know, I went out on a lot of walks. It definitely did some auto fitness tracking. Like you start moving for more than a couple minutes and it starts tracking it like a workout. So it definitely did some of that. Really simple use, not a ton of alerts, a couple texts back and forth with my wife. So, I mean, we're not talking heavy use. I'm at 79%. And it's all because of this secondary display. So whatever you do, whatever chipset or processor, yeah, we're going to make it more power efficient. It's the screen. It's the screen and the wireless connectivity. As soon as you can move to a low power display, you can have an always on timepiece and you get substantially more. runtime out of that gadget. It just kills me because, like, we learned this with the Pebble. You can have a smartwatch that is really feature complete, is great for notifications and alerts, has speech to text transcription, is just a wonderful companion gadget to your phone, and it can run for 7 days. You just have to give up on having a pretty fluid OLED. We know this. This is well known. This is easy. We just got to convince consumers, like, that would be a benefit. From Gabaletta, I think Samsung is trying to capture more market share since their latest smartwatches haven't been moving as they hoped it would. I feel this is also a strategic pivot where Samsung is probably looking at, I mean, because it's still going to benefit them. If you're into the Samsung ecosystem, if you have a Samsung phone, consumer behavior would dictate that you're likely going to shop a Samsung watch first. At the same time, this can also be a product that helps bring people into Samsung services if they're on a competing phone. Like, you got a OnePlus, maybe you're not that excited by the OnePlus watch, but you could pick up this Galaxy Watch and, hey, you know, this is working really well. You know, maybe my next phone will be a Samsung phone to go with my Samsung watch. So I think it behooves Samsung, for a product category like this, an accessory like this, if they were leading the market, yeah, you'd want to lock that in. You'd want to be like Apple. If you're not, you want to get every potential consumer that you can, and you want to reduce your development costs. So they can dump more of this on Google for all the software dev, give them some of the what they've kind of learned from Tizen, maybe move some of those Tizen apps over to Wear OS, and their platform gets cheaper to produce, and they get the benefit of potentially more customers out there for their accessories. I think it's win-win. I think it's really solid. Matt Tyler, TicWatch 4 Pro 5G Mark III. Well, I do like that they finally, like, for the TicWatch Pros, it seems like they're now kind of properly TicWatch. There was the TicWatch Pro LTE, which really just should have been the TicWatch Pro 2. And Fat Produce, my Amazfit Bip S is still one of my favorite smartwatch fitness trackers to use these days. The Amazfits have been awesome. Like, I really like that T-Rex. It is overkill for what I use. And again, like, I think Dave Burns was thinking about swapping some stuff out. I really do need to create that fitness channel on the Discord, because now I am going to start really trying to lose some weight here. And for Matt Tyler, I have a Samsung watch, Poco phone, and Sony headphones. I'm loyal to no one. I love it. All right, so let's wrap up this first block, talking some gadgets. And the LG that never was. This is apparently, a bulk of these were made, I think somewhere around 3,000 units, as leakers are trying to highlight. And LG has had to pull the ability to purchase these. So what they were going to do is set up a program where employees could buy one of these phones that wasn't going to be released to the public. There's almost no hardware support. There will be no software updates for it. They're going to sell it at some crazy reduced price, like the exchange rate, like under $200. But we've gotten a few of the leaks out on what the marketing materials for this phone would have been if it had been released publicly. And so this comes by way of the LG V60 subreddit. User Cotton V1 posted this a couple days ago. And we can all share a moment. Again, if I weren't in my office, I'd pour out one for an LG phone that we'll never get to play with. Here, let me click back into screen share. I present to you the LG Velvet 2 Pro. So this looks like it would have been the combination of the Velvet line and the V series. Most of the development and the sort of serial numbers on this phone reference a V700, which would have been like a V70. But we see that this is absolutely piggybacking on the hardware design of the Velvet. Still one of the prettiest phones ever made. You know how I get about, glass backs and curved glass and curved screens, but like so many phones, like the first run of Galaxy Edge devices, I think still holds true for a Velvet. If you're not using it in a case, it really is this piece. Like, you'd want to set it on a Lazy Susan and put a case on top of it and sort of shine museum lights on it. And the Velvet is stunning design. It's gorgeous. So I'm not surprised that they would have continued with that aesthetic for a Velvet too. But, kind of breaking this down, from the Wing to the Velvet 2, we also see one of the major changes that would have been coming from LG, in that there is no headphone jack on this phone. Triple camera array, probably a larger or at least a higher resolution main sensor, then complementing ultra wide. The entire sort of curve and aesthetic, the rounding off the corners, all of this is feeling like sort of a, again, to me, this looks like you're sort of merging some of the elements that I like from a OnePlus with a phone like an Xperia, very tall, very narrow, very skinny, but we wouldn't have gotten headphone jack. The Velvet's headphone jack was not quad DAC, but it was still very good. And the dongle that came with the Wing was also surprisingly good for a headphone dongle. So that would have been a bummer. Absolutely. So from where I was on V50, we were starting to have those conversations. How long can LG hold out as the last audiophile grade phone? It would seem 2021 would have been the year that LG also followed suit and shuffled off the headphone jack on their devices, shuffled off that mortal coil of premium tier audio as a feature, as a perk, as a benefit. Again, LG was always the company that held on to features the longest, right? So when there was a trend away from removable backs, LG put out the V20. As companies were getting rid of IR blasters, LG still had one on their phones. Again, it was like you could always kind of count on them to sort of hold on to the very end. This would have been the year. If we ever had to speculate or wonder, like, when would we maybe lose that feature? 2021, just in time to sort of send it over to Asus. So you can grab yourself an ROG and you can have your premium ESS Saber DAC on that side too. Matt Tyler, if LG have a working Velvet 2 Pro in house, they will send it to their boy to tell us what we could have had. This is so frustrating. I actually had a conversation with a high level LG international marketing guy, and he was just so effusive, like, man, you've been a super fan for us. We really appreciate, how you've been talking about our products and giving them fair reviews. There's just nothing we can do. So being a super fan for LG gets me nothing. Big old eggshell zero. This will absolutely show up in the hands of someone like at The Verge, right? Someone who was some type of influencer or reviewer who was never a part of communicating what LG phones were about. I will not be on that list. I'm just not big enough to convince an LG employee to potentially risk their employment by sending one my way. Because again, apparently it's going to only go to LG employees. They're going to come up with a lottery system to sell these phones off. And, you're basically going to lose your job if one of these phones ever makes it out of South Korea.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadowd.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadowd.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
All right. Just a few other little things here. We do have some other specs that we can kind of just check out what this phone would have been about. And these were all translated too, which is super, super helpful. They would have had ultrasonic recognition touch volume button. So instead of having clicky little buttons on the side, it would have been some type of touch sensitive strip for volume controls, which again, I'm kind of glad it's not a quad DAC, because if you slip on a quad DAC, you can really mess up your hearing. Those things get loud, but no buttons. High quality grip with keyless raindrop design, raindrop on the camera sensors, but then also everything about this phone is sort of inspired by Liquid. The taper to the corners, the curves to the edges. I think that would have been interesting. Again, it's a premium, expensive way to control your phone. I would have been interested to see how that might have played out. We don't have the specifics on the camera tech. We just know that it would have had a 64 megapixel binning sensor, Sony's next gen 64 megapixel camera. I imagine that this still would have been the same size, though. So instead of using the Samsung 64, which is in the V60, it would have been a Sony. So I imagine this still would have been like a 1/1.7 inch camera sensor. But they say big sensor, ultra wide camera. And that to me would have been the exciting part. We lose sight of the fact that LG was well ahead of the curve on things like camera tech. The V50 still actually stands as kind of this high watermark. Before the iPhone could give us 4K 60 frame per second video on both the standard camera and the ultra wide, LG was there first. G8 and V50, you could shoot 60 frame per second software stabilized video from the ultra wide. And we lost that on the V60. They went with a lower cost ultra wide camera on the V60. It was one of the ways that they saved cash. And that bummed me out. I loved taking that ultra wide and using that as like sort of my vlogging setup. Super wide, you get this nice field of view, but it's buttery stable, super smooth, and it's at the same resolution and frame rate as your main sensor. So if they had gotten back to that, like even if it was just a 1/2.55 inch camera sensor, like, you know, an iPhone camera sensor, just getting back to a more premium ultra wide would have been great. I can't tell you like how sweet it is being able to pop back and forth on a OnePlus 9, shooting 4K 60 on the main sensor, and my daughter does something cute, but I need a wider field of view. And instead of trying to run backwards because of the software crop, I can just go, and then I'm shooting ultra wide, and I didn't have to stop the clip and recycle and then start reshooting again. It's super. I would have loved to have seen what LG could do with that kind of hardware. From Fat Produce, I just don't understand how these OEMs can possibly entertain the idea that buttonless devices are a good idea, especially after seeing the disastrous implementations that Huawei and other manufacturers have tried out the last couple of years. Oh, but it's all about selling cool and selling lifestyle, and look how futuristic. It's not about practical, or else we'd all still have rear fingerprint sensors. Just wrapping this up, we've got the rest of the spec sheet here. Would have been a 10-bit HDR display, and I believe they were saying it was going to be 120 hertz, but it also would have included some of the LG gimbal features that we saw on the Wing, and 240 frame per second ultra-wide slow motion, which would have been very welcome. That would have been cool. I really would have liked that. So specs here, yes. So here it is, a 6.8-inch full HD OLED at 120 hertz. The front camera would have been a 10-megapixel shooter. Yeah, I really wish they could break down what the ultra wide was, but it would have been 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage with the Snapdragon 888 and that 4,500 milliamp hour battery. So I also imagine there would have been some kind of like 30 watt charging somewhere in there, because I feel like that's what V60 and Wing were able to do. So yeah, this would have been, you know, a pretty sweet phone. I mean, all things considered, if you were to put something like this up against a OnePlus 9 or a OnePlus 9 Pro, I feel like we would have been in the right ballpark. trading some blows back and forth. The OnePlus 9 camera sensors probably would have been better, but the LG camera software absolutely would have stomped on the OP. We would have had all those perks that people say that you need to have, like faster frame rates and you know, the HDRs and stuff like that. It would have been a bummer because this phone would have come out and people like me still would have been disappointed, right? I love the headphone jack on LG phones. I love that quad DAC, but it never would have gotten compared appropriately, right? This would have matched up spec for spec straight on against a Galaxy S21 Plus. Like, this looks like it's purpose built to do battle with an S21 Plus and would have had some really engaging camera features that an S21 would have lacked. And instead, all you would have, like, they can't even give us the quad DAC anymore. It's like the only reason to buy an LG phone. Would have failed. LG just couldn't survive. And, you know, they even let down their core people who care about headphones. Like, you know that they would have just cherry-picked that one omission, just railed on it. Because that's what they did with the V60. Oh, it's got a 1080p display and it's not 120 hertz. I mean, like, it's so boring. Ignoring all the things that a V60 could do, right? And the fact that it was $200 cheaper at launch than a V50. So again, it sucks because like it's entirely predictable what the commentary and discussion on this phone would have been. Goran Petrovic, LG without that sweet DAC and with HTC U12 Plus volume controls would be widely criticized and hated. Again, LG did the right thing. It was, if they were going to pull out of the market, a year of ridiculous global component shortages was the right year to walk away. And again, it's like now we get to watch OnePlus become the whipping boy. Xiaomi is the like kind of alternative brand that's hip and cool to talk about. And OnePlus, oh, OnePlus 9, that's a garbage phone. But this Mi 11i, what a great bargain. And you're like, oh, I feel like it's super obvious that you're kind of rigging this conversation here because now it's going to be fashionable to hate on OnePlus like it was fashionable to pan LG. Simon says, Hypno, I would love an LG. I will get one soon from eBay. LG would have been slammed for leaving quad DAC behind and skimping on features. But again, it all would have been dependent. What I see on the spec sheet would have matched up terrifically against an S21 Plus. And something tells me that this phone would have been priced just under an S21 Plus. And then you'll get a bunch of tryhards and thirsty Samsung Knights going, oh, but I can trade in and get a phone on sale and you don't pay full MSRP. And you don't on LG either. You know, like the G8 launched on a sale price that priced it under an S10e. You know, like the V60 launched $200 cheaper and it still had carrier deals and BOGOs. So it's just frustrating because spec for spec, you review what the phone isn't. Oh, it doesn't have a quad DAC. Not worth it. And all this time, all of those reviewers have been telling us how people don't care about quad DACs. So why would that have ever factored into their consideration of this device against an S21 Plus? Except Samsung has to win. If you want your channel to be profitable, if you want your viewership to rise, you have to say nice things about Samsung and nothing else can be competitive. And that's what's a bummer. This phone looks like it was purpose-built to do battle with an S21 Plus, just like a OnePlus 9. It's purpose-built to exist in that tier. The price kind of confirms where the manufacturer feels it belongs in a lineup of other premium tier gadgets. It makes perfect sense. It looked like it could have been good competition. Wouldn't have mattered. Wouldn't have mattered. They'll jump through every hoop to make sure an Apple or a Samsung wins, because that's what's going to be better for their audience. Oh, Simon says, Hypno, who will buy LG's IP for dual display? I think all that's going to die at LG. I don't think anyone else is looking at giving you features. I said this, you know, you can catch it on the Patreon. If you go to my Patreon, it's a public video, but it lives on the Patreon, where I went back and looked at the Velvet. And imagine getting all of those features on a Galaxy A70. an A72 with more premium construction, a headphone jack with a great amp, pen support, so you can use a stylus like a Note, like a proper, you know, active pen stylus, memory card support, support for dual display if you want to go dual display, and it costs the same as a Galaxy A70 series. You won't find those types of feature-rich mid-rangers anymore. The market has spoken, and the market decided that you don't need features. And tech reviewers are all too happy to inform you, to let you know, you don't need features on your phones. Why would you use things on your phone? You don't do things on your phone. Average consumers just check their Instagram and watch a few TikToks. That's all you need. But I'm not bitter. Vazicose 8. LG also had Screen Plus. Velvet had a fully featured desktop mode. Show me what lower cost Galaxy has stylus support and a desktop mode and a headphone jack and can support a dual display case at the same time. That phone does not exist. But again, you know, reviewers said that you didn't want features and things. So that's what we get. We get phones with less features. Simon says, Hypno, does the Velvet support USB mics for video like the V60? I have not tried, but now knowing that the auto camera app, which I did a little YouTube short on my V60, because I had no idea that the auto mode does support USB audio recording. Since it's an auto mode feature, I would imagine it does, but I got to give it a try. So don't take my guess as any type of confirmation of that feature existing. But that's the other thing too, is the Velvet has proper USB 3 OTG to support that desktop mode. I got to tell you, it is a bit of a bummer when I pick up a phone like the Mi 11i and it's a USB 2 port with no video output. Like, you can't connect an external display to this and file transfer rates are a little slower. But, you know, people don't use features, so there you go. Oh, sorry, I just gotta stretch, crack my back. That one sounded gross in my head. Okay, why don't we take a quick break here just to talk up the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. We're really trying to help support and promote other content creators. We're growing organically, catching new subscribers every day, getting more submissions, getting new upvotes. We really want to see this continue to thrive. And if you want to find a broader tech conversation than what YouTube serves you, you should head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is not a subreddit about me on my podcast. This is a subreddit to try and help share and promote content that you feel deserves more attention. So, top of the subreddit this week, a number one with a bullet, the Sony Xperia 1 Mark III unboxing from Tech Nick. Now, this phone is on sale in China. I do not have one to show you my impressions on an Xperia 1 Mark III, but it's already kind of getting out there from Asian markets and tech outlets are picking it up. I may or may not be trying to find a way to import one, even though I hate dealing with like Chinese ROMs and custom software for different regions that doesn't support where I live. But this is a pretty good look, just a sort of an opening salvo on the conversation surrounding what will probably be the phone for me in 2021. I want the phone that does all the things that I like to do with a phone. So that definitely deserved some attention on the subreddit this week. Took the top spot, took the win. Second place, we've got the LG V60 does support USB audio while shooting video. I shot a little short and showed it off, which is funny that the number three video on the subreddit, coming by way of Easy Computer Solutions, looking at the V60 in 2021. So something in the air where both Eric and I were like, you know what, you know, guys, yo fam, we gotta talk up some V60. There is no V70. There's a hole in our lineup where we would have been talking about a phone this year. Let's track back. Let's talk V60. Increasingly, And I'm being serious here. Like, I'm super excited for Xperia 1 Mark III. It is going to be hard going to any other phone. V60 had all of these different individual features that I genuinely use, that like stylus support, dual display, memory card, headphone jack, desktop modes. No matter what phone I go to next, like, I'm facing serious compromises on how I was really using the V60. Ah, just killing me. So Loki Ted, Eric and Reddit telling Juan to stick with the V60 for 2021. In between other review devices, it is very likely that my SIM card gonna end up back in a V60 from time to time. Moving right along, just kind of rounding out the rest of the top 10, we've got Tech PhD looking at Samsung Sam, if you want a Samsung waifu. We've got Adam Reviews Tech with 3,200 subscribers checking out the Pixel. Which Pixel is this? It looks like the 4A 5G. Oh, no, Pixel 5. Sorry, Pixel 5. 6 months later, we've got Tech Odyssey looking at the Unihertz Titan Pocket as like an inspiration or some carryover for folks who are into Blackberries. We've got Clifton. Look at this. Clifton Oubre? I don't know how you say that last name, Clifton, but 100 subscribers, LG V60 video test. Another V60 video. And then these were just kind of some cool extra nerdy videos. Gary Explains, talking about the death of 32-bit computing, and 9to5 Google with kind of a hands-on with Fuchsia OS. It was more a how we set up a Fuchsia emulator to run on a product and why it's not ready for you to try it video. But we did get a few little glimpses on what Google's next operating system might look like. So kind of interesting. I mean, I thought it was a fun watch. But Gary Explains also, you know, goodbye 32-bit. It's all 64 from here on out. So great roundup, great lineup, awesome conversations, really broad overview, different regions. You're going to learn a lot. And like I said, not last week, but the week before, we officially broke 1,800 members, 1,829 as of today's count. So it's growing. It's organic. This feels real. You're going to find content. And I'm still going to put out that call. I'd like to see more written articles. So we got tons of videos, but if you know content creators and reviewers and tech enthusiasts that are writing articles, please share them along. Let's see some more blogs. Let's see some more write-ups. Let's see some more text that we can also share on this. Don't be stingy with those upvotes. Anytime you come to share something, also click that up arrow on some other content too. We want to help spread the word on this kind of content. 2,000 members, Juan buys us all nachos. Probably not. I don't know that I can afford that many nachos, but we should do something fun. I dropped the ball on 1,000 members where I wanted to do some kind of special live stream or community thing. At 2,000, I really need you all to kick my ass and that we can really get in there and do something special to celebrate that milestone. Because I feel at 2,000, that's also like confirmation. This is a real idea. Again, it's growing, real people, real numbers, bit by bit. It's there aren't any hijinks here. We're not trying to fill it full of bots. Having these interactions, like, it kind of fuels me for the week, seeing that this stuff really is starting to resonate. So from Dave Burns, there's a great taqueria near me that makes amazing nachos. I took my daughter out to my favorite place in Burbank, and now I'm kind of itching to get back out there, even though it's like a 45-minute drive from where I am now. From V Hugh, the hardest thing to find for me is a V60 dual screen not sold for full price when used. Yeah, component pricing on that is going to skyrocket. See, here's what people never gave LG credit for. When it came to the retail market, we always knew, well, LG phone comes out at this MSRP, immediately goes on sale. They're always sold initially at sales price, and then they would drop. What people never followed up on was at around a year, that phone would hold value at a pretty consistent rate. There were fewer of them out there. So the stock for like used phones would sort of hold steady. And it was very regular. Especially, I remember keeping tracks on prices around the V40. And the V40 was regularly valued higher than a lot of Samsung phones, comparable Galaxies. I'm not saying, oh, the V40 was a better phone. I liked it better. But what you would see is Samsung's aggressive trade-in deals and sales, dropping prices regularly on Galaxy phones, you would drop value harder than sort of the one-year pricing on LG devices. Now we're in fire sale. So you got to shop now. You want to grab a V60, a Velvet, a Wing, anything like that. You've got to jump on it, because after that stock is out, what you're going to pay for accessories and phones is going to be silly. You know, when you want to replace the screen on a V60, you're going to have to buy another V60. It's going to get incredibly difficult to source those materials. So it's pretty heady stuff. It gets pretty intense. From Lolly DK 1001, I hate when people compare phones and act like the smallest things are actually a huge deal, like 20 PPI difference or Gorilla Glass 6 instead of Victus. But again, they'll always move the goalposts. I mean, seriously, watch the trend. Watch the behavior, because it always seems to line up where if you can reasonably guide the conversation over to Samsung and Apple, then that's what the tone of the review for another product is going to be. Why you shouldn't buy this gadget when you could buy Sam Apple. Because all they want to do is pat people on the back for buying into the most popular products. It's a confirmation bias machine. From McCorkorin 3, this is why YouTubers don't care about fast charging anymore. Yeah, when Apple invents fast charging, we're going to care about it a lot more. And when Samsung decides to replace fast charging on their products, then it'll be worth it. Right now, it's good if you want to own a lesser phone. Like if you want to slum it with a OnePlus, yeah, I mean it's nice to have that to assuage your poor decision making in buying a OnePlus. Oh, well, at least you get, you know, like a good perk, like fast charge. If you're into that, if you care about that, but what do you think? What do you think down in the comments? I've been talking, and this whole review has basically just been telling you not to buy the phone. But what do you think? Hate it so much. Oh, I'm not shilling for Apple just yet. Why don't we move on? Why don't we switch gears so that I can start talking about Apple while we've still got 40 minutes left here? And again, I want to move us over so that we can all jump on to the WWDC keynote. This was just an interesting bit of news that came out of the Apple Epic lawsuit. Why Apple doesn't care that a quarter of all iPhone users eventually switch to Android. So this is interesting. The common knowledge, the truisms that we believe from Apple PR is that this relationship is one direction. Is Android users get so frustrated with the lack of ecosystem that whenever we see a migration from one platform to another, it's Android to Apple. We see so many more people, you know, iPhones pick up more users in that direction than Apple loses from going to iOS. Now, it's funny when Apple lawyers are under oath and they have to comment on the real business metrics, that conversation seems to change. You know what? It's not so one-sided. There is real competition. Some Apple users, as many as 20% in a given quarter, you know, they find themselves going and shopping Android devices. You don't need to regulate us like we're some kind of monopolistic business practice. People choose all the time to leave our ecosystem and go over to Android. Yeah. So the sort of filings here. In 2019 and 2020, Apple's market research found meaningful switching quarter over quarter when iPhone owners purchased a new phone. One quarter as high as 26%. And this was part of the disclosure in the Apple versus Epic lawsuit. Epic Games said during the trial that Apple's App Store is anti-competitive and monopolistic and doesn't allow developers to earn fairly. Apple said during the trial that Epic wants us to be Android, but we don't want to be, and indicated that there needs to be a single, highly curated App Store in order to protect users' privacy, security, and reliability. Now, we know that that's also not a task that Apple always succeeds at. A couple of weeks back, we talked about a breach where 120 million iOS users were compromised. Apple didn't really make a lot of noise about that, and those users probably didn't see much disclosure on the potential of their data being their data and their security being compromised. So again, we love to see the PR. Apple loves to hype up how good they are at privacy and security. The reality is they're kind of the same as everyone else. They're not that much better. And when there's a problem, it can be more difficult to fix that problem because of how insular their walled garden is, and they're not inclined to share that data because it kind of hurts their market image. Same thing here. If you were to ask people just sort of off the street, well, yeah, if anyone were going to switch platforms, it's going to be Android to iOS, obviously. I mean, you got to have the right color bubbles in iMessage, right? But quarter over quarter, that doesn't always play out. Now, Apple retention is still somewhere around like 80%. So in terms of individual manufacturers, it's still overwhelmingly likely that someone who owns an iOS device is going to stick with an iOS device, as opposed to like an Android manufacturer where they can jump from Samsung to Xiaomi to OnePlus to Oppo to Motorola to any other player out there. There isn't as much loyalty when you have real competition. And that needs to be the linchpin. It's not Apple has a monopoly over the cell phone market. It's Apple has a monopoly over a platform of services like iOS. That's going to be legally difficult to untangle in courts. But when roughly half of the smartphone consumers in the United States have no competition for their next phone, unless they want to throw away all of their purchases and all of their media and switch cloud service providers and jump through some pretty aggressive hoops to go from iOS to Android, I feel like there's a good faith argument to talk about antitrust. Whether or not it's perfectly deemed a monopoly, we do need to look at anti-competitive business practices from Apple. AirTags, another great example. Let's just copy Tile's business model and then force our users to contribute location data. If you want to use the Find My Phone features, well, we're just going to plug you into the Apple AirTag market. We care about your privacy and your security and all that data stuff, you know, your location data, all that stuff. But we're going to use you. Even if you don't have any AirTags, you're a part of it now. Welcome to owning an iPhone. It's frustrating because like it's the same problem I have with Samsung. Last week we talked about Samsung's tacky marketing, again, like trying to bully iPhone users for having crappy cameras when we know that's not true, but that's what their ad is going to make it look like. If you want to take a picture of a grilled cheese, better not have an iPhone. The marketing never lives up. I should say the products never live up to this kind of marketing. Samsung is epic this and do what you can't and aspirational, but then also slamming iPhone owners, Apple employees, and Apple themselves. That's tacky. That's hack. That's tired. At the same time, Apple is still piggybacking on this old idea of like, Macs don't get viruses. It just works. When right now we're going through another round of crazy battery drain on iPhones. This entire generation of iPhone, we have not fully sorted the transition to 5G and how it talks to and how an iPhone talks to companion accessories like the Apple Watch. If you really use your iOS device to the fullest, like Apple claims you can, your battery will not last a day. But the marketing. Cup of cash. Juan has the best voices. So Dave Burns, 5G is not going to kill iPhone batteries. 5G is already killing iPhone batteries, and 5G carriers like Verizon are heavily recommending that if you want the best battery life, you should look at disabling the 5G on phones like iPhones, because boy howdy, Apple's strategy of putting in the bare minimum battery capacity to help you last a day does not work when all of the components get way more powerful and you've got to switch up radio networks from LTE to 5G. Again, the A14 is a great chipset. That SoC is super powerful. It's facing some of the same problems as the A88. Especially for GPU performance, you start sustaining anything that taps the GPU and you're going to watch your battery life plummet. And the phone's going to start throttling more aggressively than last year's phone. You sustained gameplay, you're probably better off with an iPhone 11. You really are. But now you might not get all the fun new software features because Apple cut you off for new feature updates. So there you go. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Oh, and Matt Tyler also bringing up a point. Right to Repair's biggest pushback is coming from Apple. People can say Apple don't do monopoly all they like, but Right to Repair is just another way that they want to keep control. Another way that they want to keep control is a very disappointing story where Apple made this big postured show out of supporting their employees. We're a year in quarantine, life in the pandemic, and we're going to make sure our employees are safe, that they're working from home. What a great perk, what a great benefit. We're this awesome company. So last week, a story came out that Apple is going to be flipping the switch on that, where they're expecting people to come back to the office in September. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm like clearing my throat right in front of this microphone. I need to do like the Taizan Day, like move away from the mic. That didn't make it any better. The follow-up to that story, it's not just Apple's going to say people need to come back into the office. Okay, well, that's all I guess there is to say about it. This actually coming from The Verge. Zoe Schiffer. I don't know if it's Zoe or Zoe. I'm sorry. Apple employees push back against returning to the office in internal letter. Apple employees are pushing back against a new policy that would require them to return to the office 3 days a week starting in early September. Staff members say they want a flexible approach where those who want to work remote can do so, according to an internal letter obtained by The Verge. And so I would highly recommend checking this out where they publish the whole letter. I'm going to highlight just this one paragraph here because I think it's very telling. Apple's relationship with consumers is very rosy and sunny. It just works. It's feel good. It's aspirational, pro products that really help you get the most out of life. But Apple's relationships with developers and their own employees is a lot more contentious than the public face that they're putting out here. And I would imagine that the same is going to hold true for any other major manufacturer, humongous tech company. We're hearing similar stories. Microsoft is going to be trying to bring people back into campuses and offices. I'd imagine Google is doing the same. You know, these initiatives that don't seem to make a lot of sense given the year that we just had and how productivity was not affected. So I want to get back into this. This is the paragraph that Apple employees supporting this internal letter speaks volumes about the current climate of work at a corporation, one of the wealthiest companies the planet has ever seen. And this is what their employees are saying internally. Let me highlight it here. Over the last year, we often felt not just unheard, but at times actively ignored. Messages like, "We know many of you are eager to reconnect in person with your colleagues back in the office," with no message acknowledging that there are directly contradictory feelings among us, feels divisive and invalidating. Not only do many of us already feel well connected with our colleagues worldwide, but better connected now than ever. We've come to look forward to working as we are now, without the daily need to return to the office. It feels like there is a disconnect between how the executive team thinks about remote, location-flexible work and the lived experiences of many of Apple's employees. For many of us at Apple, we have succeeded not despite working from home, but in large part because of being able to work outside the office. The last year has felt like we have truly been able to do the best work of our lives for the first time, unconstrained by the challenges that daily commutes to offices and in-person co-located offices themselves inevitably pose, all while still being able to take better care of ourselves and the people around us. This is going to be a major showdown for companies and corporations that are trying to keep top talent. Right now would be a very good time for software startups and for established corporations to say, hey, one of the main perks of doing business with our company is all of the money that we would have poured into ridiculous masturbatory offices that make us look super cool. Instead of that, we're just going to pay you more, give you better benefits. And as long as you get your projects done, we don't care where you get them done. You want to siphon off some talent from Apple? Make that your core mission. Building a humongous spaceship campus right now is a stupid idea. Signing ridiculously long leases for giant office parks so that you can keep everybody under this like umbrella tent is a stupid idea. Obviously, I feel companies and corporations need some kind of headquarters and meeting spaces, face-to-face interactions, ways to do pitches and presentations. Like, that needs to exist. But this idea that you've got to house every single one of your employees under one giant building, under one roof, is antiquated and sad. A year before the pandemic, I did a video about some of the issues facing Southern California infrastructure. We're constantly pouring money into expanding freeways and repairing roads. And increasingly, corporations hire employees and don't pay them enough to live near the headquarters that they force the employee to work at. And I feel there needs to be a punitive market correction. I feel like a corporation needs to look at some sort of additional burden, additional tax. They're putting this on their employees. You want to come and work at our facility, but you can only afford to live 2 hours away. And that was actually the reality for my wife for a while before her company got real smart about how their offices were distributed and their entire team was able to move to an office much, much closer to where most of the team lived. That is a perk. That is a tangible consumer perk. Our work-life balance is going to be better for you if you come work for our company. You're going to make more money per time worked because you're not going to spend 2 hours in the car each way of your commute. At its worst, if my wife hit bad traffic, she was in the car for 4 hours a day. And I'm very grateful that her bosses were able to adapt to that. They were able to make that better for a big chunk of their employees. So if the company's not going to do it themselves and they're going to start to lose talent, I also feel like the additional wear and tear on infrastructure, fuel costs, air quality, all of that needs to be accounted for. If the corporation cannot pay their employees well enough to live within bicycling distance of their headquarters, then they're contributing to all of the things that we say are major problems for infrastructure and the environment. So they need to be responsible for also contributing to the cleanup of what they're causing. Pulling all the extra power and electricity, using all that extra water, those need to be taxed at higher rates. And even down to how far do your average employees need to commute? Well, maybe we need to charge you $1 per mile driven. So every employee, let's say they live 2 hours away. Well, that's going to be, you know, $30 every day they commute that way. Oh, you don't want to pay that. Well, maybe you need to either offer subsidized housing as an employee perk, or find ways that you can get new employees working closer to the campuses that you want to set up. If you want the benefit of this giant image for your company, you need to help solve some of the issues of giant office park commutes. Because California, it's unsustainable. And especially life under the pandemic, what did we see? As soon as work from home started, we saw a tangible exodus of people leaving Southern California. Like, I'm still doing business with the same company, but I can do that business in Idaho. Bye! It's really easy to make money on the first half of a business or a solution. If you never have to consider the environment, the cleanup, the disposal, and you can put all of that onto the backs of taxpayers, your company can be so much more profitable. And now I feel like in light of this work from home, of how we treat employees, of how businesses foster good relationships with their employees, we need to actually make some kind of tangible change there. You know, if your product is profitable only because you don't have to clean up after yourself, then I feel like that's a business model that needs to die. Excuse me. But you know, Dave Burns is saying, God, what a communist. Well, it's not my planet, comrade. It's our planet. So maybe it's not just my mental health, comrade. It's our mental health. But Apple, again, you've got some of the top talent in the tech industry. You've got some of the brightest minds working for your company. They're telling you how they want to work for your company. And they've demonstrated over a year that productivity has not dropped. And in fact, they have been able to accomplish everything that's been set out for them. And the executive team at Apple's still like, nah, brah, come on, just drive down to campus. We need to hover over your shoulder to make sure that you're still getting your work done. Because, like, we wouldn't be doing our middle management jobs if we weren't, like, interrupting your day with, messages and drops by your cubicle and meetings that you can't tune out of because now you're there in person. I really tell you, like, from some of the times that I would do pitches and in-person meetings for production companies, it is so much better doing them over Zoom. I'm got my face on the camera, but I'm working on anything else. I'm not really tapped into that Zoom as someone's kind of like ponderously going through their PowerPoint presentation. I'm writing a script. I'm editing another video. I am so much more productive when I don't have to sit and like pretend to be engaged in this in-person conversation. It is so nice. And I can only imagine for people working office jobs that that's been a huge quality of life improvement for how many meetings are scheduled unnecessarily. Kenox 80. But Juan, who is going to consume those free Cobb salads and lattes at their campuses? You know, the one that actually did kind of suck. I didn't use it very often. I didn't use it very much at all. I think I only completed like two or three videos total. But when YouTube shut down the creator spaces during the pandemic, they shut down, they had these facilities where you could get like a studio time. And like some of these were like main stage television broadcast style studio spaces. And you could rent camera packages and lighting packages and audio kit. They were really cool. On my own channel, didn't use it very often. Did a handful of videos with some friends and collaborations. There's a great video of me and Trisha playing Family Feud. It's a YouTuber Family Feud, and that was all shot down at the Creator Space. When they shut those down, that kind of hurt, because those kinds of facilities are really difficult to find. And I know it was like an unsustainable model for Google, but it was really cool getting to play with stuff like that. From Loli DK, it's not your phones, Juan. It's our phones. Yes, that's accurate. I hope to share these experiences. So I feel like whenever I get a new phone, it's like I'm getting this new phone for all of us to talk about this new phone. And I really do, especially over the next year. Like I sent out the OnePlus 9 over to Barry Johnson. Please go check out Barry Johnson's YouTube channel. He's doing awesome work with his new setup and his style is so clean. I really like how he shot that OnePlus 9 video. But I'm wanting to do a little bit more of that, like tapping a few more of my friends and seeing if we can get some like exchanges and challenges and some more collaborative conversations happening where, you know, I don't feel like I have to buy and own every single phone or tap every single PR company begging for review units. But you know, if I come to a phone a little late and I can trade, you know, something I had for something that they have, then I feel like that's a better way for all of us to kind of be talking about these different gadgets. Dave Burns, Juan is wearing a red cap. IWW Unite. Aditya, when are we getting the Sharp Aquos R6? That is high on my list of priorities. I totally fumbled trying to get ROG, getting the Red Magic, the gaming phones. I loved spending some time with the Black Shark. But Sharp, I'm very, very aggressively, now that we're moved in and we've moved some things around and I can finally look at my finances and see like what the second half of the year, like what money is going to be put towards the channel, that is high on the list. I am desperate to try and pick up that Sharp. So I'm going to hopefully jump on that soonish when we get there. All right. We're down to kind of our last 15 here before I want to hand everybody off to WWDC. I hope you do jump on it. Just check out what Apple has to say. Maybe they'll even bring up like work from home. You know, how good their employees did, and to celebrate the success of their employees completing projects and staying productive, is that they're going to force them all back into the office to the rousing, thunderous applause of all of the plants that they have in the front rows of the audience to really hype people up. And you go, woo, yay, Apple's always right. It just works. I want to start this off. I teased it at the very beginning. I have one very specific prediction for iPad OS, but I kind of want to see, especially in the chat here, I don't think we're going to get a lot of hardware news, right? Apple M1 iPad already out, M1 iMac already out. Do we think that there's going to be some kind of surprise hardware announcement? Are we going to see Apple Watch brought up? Like a new Apple Watch series, because we know that there's sort of prototyping happening on the next casing for the next generation of Apple Watch. What else might they bring up in terms of, you know, hardware and specific? So Dave Burns is saying M1 Pro or M1X or whatever sort of more powerful version of the M1, maybe a glimpse at what M2 might be next year or the end of this year, something like that. DTNL AirPods Pro Max Ultra, now with support for Apple Lossless. Hey, feel real bad for you spending $500 or $600 on a pair of headphones that can't play Apple Lossless. That's kind of a bummer to spend that much on a piece of audio gear that's not that premium. Simon says Hypno MacBooks with M1 Ultra Pro. From Nam saying pink iPhone 12 Pro Max. Maybe. Gabaletta, I think they're going to push software, especially on their M line of hardware. I mean, it's a developer conference. We know they're going to push software. I'm just curious to see, because sometimes we do. Like, we would get maybe an iPad announcement during a WWDC or maybe some kind of hardware kind of plug. Something in there could be kind of interesting. But I think what's going to be pretty clear, we're going to get our first looks at iOS 15, watchOS. What is it? WatchOS 7? What are we on? I don't know. I don't even know what we're on. New macOS updates. And then, of course, iPad OS updates. I got to tell you, in the entire lineup of what Apple is doing, I feel most bullish on iPad. I'm sort of most interested and most excited to see, because I feel iPad is going to be that wedge product that starts to bleed over
Like, what little disruption we'll see between Apple's product lines is not going to come from iPhone, and it's not going to come from the Mac. It's going to be at the iPad as the intersection between a mobile operating system and a desktop operating system. I think Apple has wanted it that way for a while. I mean, they're terrible, what's a computer commercials, right? They know that they're making way more money in sales on iOS, on iPhones and iPads. So we're also going to see the Mac start to become more like the iPad, right? It's now similar ARM-based processors. There's an M1 in the iPad Pro. The M1 is a similar power and configuration to what's in the iMac and the MacBook. I mean, in fact, the lowest tier iMac is less powerful than the iPad Pro with the M1. So, you know, it's like a GPU core is disabled, RAM and storage options. Like, Apple is nudging a certain tier of product into the limelight and saying, like, hey, this is a sort of our preferred platform for mobile computing. You know, you can get a MacBook, but there's this iPad thing that's now going to start more directly competing against products like a Microsoft Surface Pro. Again, we've been, if you've been following my kind of commentary, I would say since the LG V20, I have been begging consumers to consider ARM chipset computing. ARM processors in our phones have been overkill for consumer grade computing power. And so now the M1 is a stunning accomplishment. It really is a fantastic SoC, but we've been on this train for a while. You know, the computer you have in your pocket is more than capable of fulfilling your daily consumer computing needs to a pretty high level, like 4K video editing. We just needed better software to take advantage of it. We needed developers to take mobile computing seriously. And if, apparently you can't do that until Apple does something, and then developers take it seriously because Apple did it. But I'm not bitter. So my prediction is iPad OS is going to benefit from two very strategic improvements. Now that the iPad Pro has an M1 processor and has more RAM, I feel the two biggest critical advantages for a developer conference, I think we're going to see a refreshed example of multitasking on iPads, giving us a little bit more flexibility, not just over split screen, but maybe going triple app. So you can do three apps side by side, maybe even some kind of quad, where you can divide apps into more distinct regions. And maybe that'll be just like a benefit on a larger screened iPad. You won't get that like on an iPad mini, you know, something like that. But the other one being, and again, this is for WWDC, consumers aren't going to like light up about this, but developers and people who utilize this stuff at a pretty high tier, I think we're finally going to see Apple open up some of the RAM and processor capabilities of the M1. I don't know that this will extend to the iPads on A-series chipsets, but I'll be very surprised if Apple doesn't open up the RAM requirements, or RAM limitations, I should say, on the M1. So it was a story that broke about 2 weeks ago. You get this M1 iPad, but it still allocates the same amount of RAM as any other iPad. So a developer who's doing like graphics work, a graphics app, you can only work with so many layers because then you run out of memory. You run out of RAM. You have ton more RAM in this iPad, but you as a user, you can't use it. You're paying for this hardware that has no function, that has no capability. All the people who joke about like, oh, why do you need 16 gigabytes of RAM on a phone? Well, it's likely your phone can do some crazy things like plug into an external display or run a game console like experience or even have a full standalone desktop mode. You want the RAM to do the things. And now you've got all this RAM in an iPad and Apple won't let you do the things. So that's what I think the big perk is going to be for iPad OS. I think we're going to see some little cleanup. You know, widgets will probably be cleaned up. You know, app drawer and app library will probably be spruced up. I'll be very surprised to see if iPhones get any quality of life feature improvements.
I feel for iPhone, they're going to keep piggybacking on things like support for picture-in-picture. But on an iPad Pro Max, on the bigger screen iPhone, I want true split screen. Like, I want the ability to just run two full apps at the same time, and iOS is still incapable, with this amazing hardware, is still incapable of running two programs at the same time. So I don't think we're going to get that. I think we're still going to get more of this, you know, sort of weak sauce, kneecapped picture-in-picture solution. But it would be nice. I tell you, like, especially after going triple app on my LGs, it is very rare that I don't have two apps going when I'm really looking at my phone screen. If it's a video stream and like Discord, or if it's Reddit and, you know, another chat app, or if I'm having to plug into Slack and I want to also scan something else, I'm always multitasking now. So I feel like iOS is going to be more about polish. We're going to hear about security, plugging in other accessories like AirTags. And then from there, it's just kind of expand. It's going to be kind of business as usual. We found that tier of performance, and iPhones all kind of feel the same. So you're just going to stay there. You know, iOS 15 is going to come out. Everyone's going to flip out. Oh my gosh, it's this, you know, you get updates in iPhone land, but you don't, it's not really going to be like a substantial change. It's going to be more like polishing off the edges of what was kind of problematic in iOS 14 and sprucing up some of those quality of life features. I think the biggie is going to be iPad. I really think that because of the M1, we're going to see some of the biggest and some of the more disruptive announcements coming to iPad. And we'll probably see macOS bring more of that iPad influence. Gary the Fireman, multitasking for me is walking and chewing gum. I mean, you know, to say I'm not too far from it at once. Matt Tyler, whoa, Juan, three apps at once. Let's get the iPhone to two apps at once first. Apple can't do it by themselves. Dave Burns, picture in picture is the bane of my existence. I really don't like picture. The only time I've liked picture in picture was on the Xperia Pro, where you could use PIP for their network monitor. That was kind of handy. This little floating widget that would tell you like what network you were connected to. Brilliant. I loved that. Again, that is a correct feature for an Xperia Pro to have. $2,500 phone that acts like a broadcast modem. Anything else, PIP is just always in the way. And I can dock a video and just watch it at the top and have like a 15:9 aspect ratio screen underneath. So much better. So much. Use your split screen, people. They're going to get rid of it if you don't use it. All these features that we could be using and getting more out of our phones, they just get rid of them. Like, look at Samsung, just cutting features left and right. It's awful. Rinesh, it's going to be huge. Vasicos 8, iPhone XS can't do night mode. Pixel 3a, that has an awesome night mode on it. The awesome power of an iPhone XS. Don't be poor. Just buy a new phone if you want a night mode. Lolly DK just caught it too. Because why add night mode to older phones when you can just make people upgrade to newer phones? iPhones don't get features. Feature updates don't happen. So in Android land, there's operating system fragmentation. In iPhone land, it's feature fragmentation. You don't even know until you buy that new phone. use it or they'll get rid of it. Matt Tyler saying, Juan, they get rid of things we actually use, or did you not notice? So folks, we're getting right to the end here, right at 2 hours. I'm gonna go ahead and start wrapping this up so that we can pass this off. Go check out WWDC. Like, I'll be very curious to see if my prediction rings true. It's what I hope. It's where I feel Apple is actually doing us the most benefit right now is on iPad. When developers take ARM computing more seriously, that's going to have a huge ripple effect for all of our other products. You know, getting better video editing, photo editing, content creation, lifestyle management, productivity, documents, all of that stuff is going to get better. It sucks that developers couldn't foresee this market until Apple put an M1 in an iPad, but this is the trend I want us to see us go. So if we have to use Apple as a nemesis company to get developers interested,
well, at least we'll finally be moving the needle on the stuff that I've been begging for like 5 years now. So folks, again, thanks so much for jumping in. And especially those of you who joined at the earlier start time, I really appreciate it. I definitely didn't want to overlap WWDC. And again, I love to keep an eye on what this developer conversation looks like. So I'm gonna hand this off now. Go check out what Apple has to pitch, to present, hopefully getting developers on board and treating developers more equitably than they have in the past, especially with their very restrictive App Store rules. And we'll circle back next week. We'll definitely be talking about this on Best of Our Week with TK Bay. So this Thursday stream, be on the lookout for some Apple developer commentary. And just as a last shout out, this is the last week. We've kind of run out the course on this sponsorship, but I just really want to send a huge shout out to Frame It, www.frameitapp.com. It really is a phenomenal video editing application. It's incredible to use to kind of keyframe your videos and make them more visually interesting. It's totally free. It's a charming little developer team. And they've been awesome enough to sponsor this podcast for the last 4 weeks, even during my move and my transition, knowing that my show was going to be a little wonky. Really, really cool folks. So again, I can't thank them enough. The support and your support and contributing to keep this production rolling, it's really huge. It really means a lot. And it's exciting now that I can finally start building on some of it. So really excited. But again, folks at Frame It, please go check out their app. It's free. It's free. You're not even like hounded with nag screens. It's really good stuff. And I'm excited that they kind of jumped on for sponsoring. So folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDG QA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. Get outside. Do some fun stuff. I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.